Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The new documentary, She's Beautiful When She's Angry, resurrects the buried and radical history of the women who founded the modern women's rights movement from 1966 to 1971. The film takes us to marches, poetry readings, and consciousness-raising groups where women grappled with equal pay, childcare, abortion, and an end to sexual violence, issues that we're still fighting for and against today. In fact, just yesterday, the Republican-dominated U.S. House voted 242 to 184 to pass a bill that would ban abortion after 20 weeks with no exceptions for a woman's health or fetal anomalies. We'll go over the details on today's show. Now, in the film, She's Beautiful When She's Angry, women are marching for abortion on demand without apology. So where are we 40 years later? Well, during the first 3 months of this year, 332 proposals seeking to restrict access to abortion were introduced in the states. 9 were passed. The nation's Danny McLean writes that She's Beautiful When She's Angry is touring the country just as the concept of the grassroots movement as the spark for social change is having a moment. The public is grappling with the question of how change happens. Today, we are talking about that with Mary Doerr. She's director and producer of She's Beautiful When She's Angry. She's an award-winning documentarian who brings an activist perspective to her films. Hi, Mary. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Lovely to talk with you again.
It's great to have you. And joining me in studio is Alice Wolfson. Alice is a veteran political activist and a pioneer in the women's health movement. She belonged to the D.C. Women's Liberation and was a member of the Daughters of Lilith Collective. She was one of the leading voices protesting the lack of female participation in the 1969-1970 Nelson pill hearings and the deliberate withholding of information regarding the pill's dangerous side effects. Alice is one of the founders of the National Women's Health Network and the Committee to Defend Reproductive Rights. Today, she is a lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities who have issues with their insurance companies. Still going strong, and Alice joins me in studio. Hi, Alice.
Hi, nice to be here.
Thank you for coming in. And I'm joined by Alta. Alta is an award-winning poet and publisher. Alta founded Shameless Hussy Press, the first feminist press in the country, which operated from 1969 to 1989. She's author of Letters to Women, the first book of overt lesbian poems in the nation. She retired the press when multiple sclerosis limited her activities. In 2006, Alta opened Alta Galleria in Berkeley, which exhibits California art. She also runs the blog Living with a Dread Disease. And her latest book is Another Moment, Living with a Dread Disease. And Alta joins me in studio. Hi, Alta. Thank you for coming in.
Hello.
It's so great to have all of you on the show today. So, Mary, I want to start off with you. This has been such a journey for you because you released this film a couple of months ago, and it's getting rave reviews. And a lot of people, including myself, who saw the film said so many times, why didn't I know about that? And wasn't that one of your goals, to really uncover the hidden history behind the women's movement?
Well, that was certainly one of the major goals. I mean, there have been many excellent books written on the history, so I cannot pretend for a moment that somehow I've unearthed stuff that no one knows. However, as we know, we live in a culture where popular culture is very important, and I couldn't believe that there had been no TV documentaries or major films that really tried to cover the beginning of this movement, which was always my focus and my goal. I was really interested in what does it take to start a movement, and how did these amazing women come to these realizations and sort of boldly set out where no one had ever been before.
And Mary, what are your thoughts on that? We were talking before the show, and I told you that I had never heard of the Jane Collective, for example. Did it surprise you, or does it surprise you? I'm sorry, Alice. Does it surprise you when you talk to people about what they knew and what they didn't know about the women's movement?
It somewhat surprises me. And then on the other hand, I myself was surprised when I saw the film for the first time and realized how many things we did not have back in 1968 that we now take for granted in 2015. So I was impressed by the scope of what Mary put into the film, because it really showed all the different ways in which women began to work and really changed changed society.
And you say that when you were young and going to these male-dominated congressional hearings, you really felt like the suffragettes happened so long ago.
First of all, they weren't just male-dominated. There were no women there at all, even though women were the people who were taking the birth control pill. And it's true, when we were out there demonstrating, when we were doing witch and doing all the different things that we did, the suffragists seemed a million miles away. Nobody really comprehended what a short time it had been between women getting the vote and now this struggle. And now it's 2015, and I cannot emphasize enough that it has to happen again.
What was it like for you to see the film and to go back to those days?
Well, like I said, I was impressed with how many different issues we were working on. I was impressed with the level of spirit, with the intensity of the activism. I think Mary did such a good job of showing around the country things were happening spontaneously, it seemed like, but not entirely. For instance, the women in D.C. started to protest about the pill hearings. We held our own pill hearings. We sent questionnaires out, thousands of questionnaires, to women all around the country who were already in women's liberation groups. And we had our own pill hearings, which, in fact, I've been told, although I've never seen it, were recorded in the congressional record at the time.
Mm. Alta, what was it like when you first saw the film and relived those years?
It's very exciting to see the women I've published still getting recognition. We were the first to publish Susan Griffin, and she reads two poems in the film. We were the first to publish Judith Arcana, who is a major figure in the Jane movement. So that was exciting.
And I loved the fact that Mary included so much art in the film. Your press, for example, street theater. I mean, people were really active and really serious, but they also had a lot of fun, and there was so much creativity behind this movement.
That's true. And the reason I started Shameless Hussy Press was because I knew great writers, and we were not being published by the mainstream presses. I brought one of the books, which became famous, for colored girls who have considered suicide when the rainbow is enough, by Antazaki Shange. Shameless Hussy started so small, there are only 7 pieces of paper in this book. I was doing it in my garage in San Lorenzo.
Wow.
But the play became a hit at Joseph Papp Theater and put us on the map. So we were publishing absolutely great work that could not find publishers.
You founded Shameless Hussy Press, the first feminist press in the country, in 1969. It operated through 1989. Tell us what's behind the word hussy.
My mother called women she didn't approve of shameless hussies. But the word itself, hussy, comes from housewife. And so there is the word housewife, where women did the right thing and took care of things, and the word hussy, where women skipped out and said, forget this.
And Alta is an award-winning poet and publisher. She ran Shameless Hussy Press from 69 to 89, and she's also authors of Letters to Women, the first book of overt lesbian poems in the nation. She retired the press when multiple sclerosis limited her activities. Alice Wolfson is a veteran political activist and pioneer in the women's health movement. Today, she's a lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities who have issues with their insurance companies. And Mary Dore is director and producer of the film She's Beautiful When She's Angry. And Mary, talk a little bit about the reaction that you're getting from young people to this film. Because, you know, as I said in my intro, it's really hard for some young people to understand what it was like before the feminist movement. I mean, at that time, women could not have career aspirations. Marriage was success. Could not decide not to have a child. You know, don't even talk about abortion or birth control.
Well, we've had really wonderful young audiences come to the film, and a lot of them are amazed by the history because, as I hate to say it, but it's really not taught anywhere outside of women's studies. And that's really shocking to me that this history has been so buried, and that was part of my motivation for making the film. But they often ask, I mean, there's clearly a lot of young feminists who are already active who show up at the film. And then there's also others who are, like, trying to figure out, what do I join? How do I find a place to go? You know, with the great wealth of the internet, there's a lot of young women's organizations all over the map in terms of online organizing. But I think that what I find that's so interesting is, one, everybody asks me about what do we do about reproductive rights, because everyone is appalled. It doesn't matter what age you are. Nobody expected this horrifying backlash to occur, and it doesn't go away. It only keeps getting worse. You know, as you said about the law yesterday, what's happening in Louisiana about access, I mean, just everywhere. As we show in the film, it's been going on in Texas for a long time. But the other side of it is, I think that there is, for younger people, what I, you know, this is kind of my take on it. Clearly, it's not scientific. I do see, to some degree, there's a longing for being in larger groups, a longing for doing some stuff face-to-face. I hear that from a lot of younger women who are in the audience, that it's not that they want to redo what the 60s did. They've got their own ideas and their own things to work on. But there is, I think, to some degree, a little envy sort of for the intensity and the closeness that the women's groups had at that time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I often bring up is, I think it's really healthy, no matter what brilliant work you're doing online, for people to sometimes, even if it's once a month, meet face-to-face, because I think it just helps reinforce your energies and your trust in one another and all of those things, which are also very important, as the women's movement showed.
Alice, what would you add to that?
I would say I would support that 100%. Women that the young women that I have seen at showings that I've been on panels about have asked over and over again, how can we do this? How can we do this? And I don't think it's enough to just do it online. I helped plan a demonstration for the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, the decision that legalized abortion. And we had some very savvy young people doing some intense social networking. Still, only about 200 people came out. I believe you were there, Rose.
I was.
And it was a small demonstration, right. Half of whom were women my age who had been there before. So very few young women, despite all sorts of outreach online.
I noticed that at a lot of events, actually, where you get these activists on whose shoulders we stand, and a lot of these women say, why am I still doing this? I mean, I've had conversations with women who are really shocked by what we're facing today, and a lot of them are saying, where are the young people?
Well, when I first moved out here in 1977, the Hyde Amendment was just starting to become law, and that was the first legislation that took away access, that took away funding for poor women. In California, the group CDRR, Committee to Defend Reproductive Rights, was the named plaintiff in a lawsuit which was successful in keeping Medi-Cal funding for abortion in California. So in California, there has always been public funding for abortion. But access and taking away access piece by piece by piece has been going on for a very long time. And every time there are enough women who say, well, that's not me. I wouldn't have an abortion at 24 weeks, or I wouldn't have an abortion at 20 weeks, without the understanding that that's just the start. Mm-hmm. That's each piece that they can get, and we better fight it all the way along, or we're going to lose it completely.
Well, so just to reiterate, yesterday the Republican-dominated House voted to pass a bill that would ban abortion after 20 weeks, no exceptions for a woman's health. The so-called Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, that's what it's called, requires rape victims to seek counseling or medical attention at least 48 hours before having an abortion. For those younger than 18 who are victims of rape or incest, the crime must be reported either to police or a government agency. And then exceptions do not apply for incest victims older than 18. So this just passed yesterday, 242 to 184. Groups say it's unconstitutional and one of the strongest anti-choice bills we've ever seen. Alta, what's your response to this?
I think we need to respect the medical staff who are uncomfortable working on late-term abortions until activists work in respect for the people for whom abortion is not okay. We need to be careful how we reach out there was not this much opposition to abortion until, I believe, 1994, when Bill Clinton expanded the period of abortions to go later in the term of the fetus. And that's when abortion activists, anti-abortion activists, really grabbed onto the fact that some children can survive at 5 months. That's what we're dealing with now. We need to respect the people who feel that that's not okay.
Alice, I want to go back to the Supreme Court decision. Yeah. The Supreme Court decision divided the different trimesters and actually did not come down against abortion at any time. It's been a complete whittling away. I agree, medical science has changed. But I also believe that women must be able to control their own bodies. And I think if I have to weigh the two, I'm going to come down on the side of women making the decision, not some legislators who decide that 1 out of 10 million babies might be able to survive with or without terrible defects.
And Mary, what are your thoughts on this? When you travel around the country and you say you get a lot of questions about abortion, talk a little bit about the conversations that you're hearing in terms of the most effective ways to organize around this.
I can't say that I'm getting great ideas from the conversations. Mm-hmm. I think people are mostly searching for new ideas on how to organize people around this. Obviously, there's many longstanding groups who've been doing amazing work, and there's no reason that people aren't joining them. But I think people are just perplexed, and they don't understand why it's happening now, which is one of the big questions I always ask, which is in a period when there's so much progress on so many issues, even though, as we've seen this year, it seems like there's a major backsliding on so many things, whether it's Black Lives Matter or voting rights, et cetera. But, there's so much more tolerance for gay rights, even though there's still plenty of homophobia in the world. And at the same time, there's this essentially this tightening control over women's bodies that makes absolutely no sense to anyone. And we don't understand why it's happening. We understand it's very well organized. It's certainly not spontaneous. And it's been going on, I think it's been going on for a very long time. I think it started back in, the Phyllis Schlafly era that, many of these protests against women's rights to abortion started very early, actually.
We also have 20-week abortion bans in a number of states, 15 states, including Alabama, Nebraska, North Dakota, Oklahoma, West Virginia. In the film She's Beautiful When She's Angry, Mary, you tell the story of the Jane Collective. It's really incredible. This information network of medical and then lay abortion providers helped provide 11,000 safe illegal abortions during that time period for women. Can you talk about what you learned about that and what was it like gathering information about the Jane Collective while at the same time so many of these laws are being introduced and passing?
Well, I hate to say this, but there are moments when I watch the film again, having seen it a zillion times, admittedly, and I wonder if we're going to end up going back to that. That's a horribly negative thing to say, but these women were immensely courageous because they knew that women were dying in large numbers, particularly poor women and women of color, from dangerous illegal abortions. And so they set out to do this in a humane way, in a safe way, in a clean way. And they did an extraordinary job. They got trained. First, they were working with other underground abortionists, and then they actually got the training themselves to do safe and legal abortions. And it was an enormous gift to everyone in the city because there will always be women who will seek an abortion. There will always be women in some dangerous circumstance of different types, whether it's, that they will, whether they just cannot afford to have the child, whether the child is, that they are pregnant because of a rape. There's a million reasons why women need abortions. And this collective did this amazing, amazing job. And they did it all sort of under the radar, but sort of above the radar. I mean, I think what I've been told by people from Chicago was that it was kind of one of those secrets that everybody knows, that even police officers would occasionally bring their girlfriends for these illegal abortions. Sure. It was, people understood the need for this, and they were grateful that somebody was doing it safely and in a humane manner.
Mary Dorr is director of the documentary She's Beautiful When She's Angry. We were just talking about the Jane Collective. And it's just one of many amazing moments in this documentary that uncovers the hidden history of the women's movement. And let's play part of the trailer of She's Beautiful When She's Angry.
What you see here is the beginning of a movement that women are human beings and that we have equal rights.
As soon as Now existed and I heard about it, I was in Now.
We in Now teach women how to fight discrimination against their own companies, how to sue their companies.
There were groups in New York, Ann Arbor, Madison, in Boston.
Well, you're talking about liberation and freedom on the racial side, and then all of a sudden men are going to turn around and start talking about putting you in your place. We decided we would form a group called Black Sisters United.
There was a group called Women's International Terrorist Conspiracy from Hell, which...
Knowledge is power through which you control our mind, our spirit, our bodies, our soul. Hex!
Free abortion's on demand! Sisterhood is power!
You know, any woman that stands up for herself is called a dyke. I thought, you know, we really need to talk about what is happening to lesbians. Oh, my God, you would have thought I unleashed an elephant in the middle of the room.
This was one of my favorites. Uppity Women Unite. We certainly did, didn't we?
The women have a fundamental right to control their own bodies and to control their own lives.
Every woman enjoy our rights! Every woman enjoy our rights! Every woman enjoy our rights!
The bitter lesson is that no victories are permanent.
FYP! Deep rape is a felony!
People are raped regardless of what they wear.
Hey! Ho ho! This rape comes...
You're not allowed to retire from women's issues.
This is not a feminist looks like! This is what a feminist looks like!
Well, these women surely are not retiring. That was a clip from the documentary She's Beautiful When She's Angry. Mary Doerr is director of the film. Alice Wolfson and Alta are both in the film. Alice, you were part of which?
I was part of... Yes, part of which, part of D.C. Women's Liberation, wrote for Off Our Backs, out on the street demonstrating. That's the thing, is the D.C. Women's Liberation group had numerous different collectives. But the collectives worked on lots of things. I also was one of the organizers for an international conference in Toronto for Vietnamese Laotian women and women's liberation that followed a conference that Women's Strike for Peace had organized. And because the feminists were, the radical feminists, I put that in quotes, were different, Women's Strike for Peace didn't want to work with the radical feminists. The radical feminists didn't want to work with Women's Strike for Peace. So there were two conferences.
Oh, dear.
Welcome to the women's movement.
And I also wanted to talk about the consciousness-raising groups, because when I was posting the show on Facebook, you said, Alice, oh, I don't do that. I don't do that social media. Mm-hmm. And what's so interesting about the consciousness-raising groups is people got together and shared stories and realized that they had the same story, sometimes for the very first time.
Absolutely. I think that's what attracted me to the women's movement. And I went to my first consciousness-raising group in around 1967, coincidentally married in 1968, so maybe that was why. But it was an amazing experience to hear women repeat over and over and over again the same kinds of things. For instance, taking myself, but that's what consciousness raising groups did. It just took yourself. I went to Barnard as an undergraduate. I never thought of going to graduate school because I was supposed to get married.
Right.
Well, we'll hold that thought. And after the break, we'll talk more about these consciousness raising groups. Really amazing footage of these gatherings in the new documentary, She's Beautiful When She's Angry, which resurrects the buried history of the women's movement. We'll be back after this.
And you are listening to Your Call on KALW in San Francisco. General Manager Matt Martin here with Nock Nguyen, producer of Your Call, asking for your support for local public radio on 800-525-9917. That's 800-525-9917. We've been hearing about She's Beautiful When She's Angry, and I'm glad to say we have a special thank you gift related to this new film.
Thanks, Matt. This film is screening across the country, but you can catch it for a limited time at the Roxy Theater. It's one of the few Bay Area appearances, and as a thank you for your contribution of $120, you can get a pair of tickets to this screening on Wednesday, July 8th at 7 p.m. And wouldn't it be great to take a young person to this screening and introduce a whole new generation to the women's movement? 800-525-9917.
Or KALW.org. Rose and her team are about keeping this information on the air, these voices on the air, these radical women, that really fits in a number of conversations that we have here on Your Call about women's issues and their connection to human liberation. That's what I think is really fascinating, hearing the ambition of this early women's movement that's told in this film, She's Beautiful When She's Angry. For a $120 contribution to KALW, come out, see this special screening. Rose will be there, as will the other folks on the Your Call team. You get to see this important film, talk to the Your Call folks, have that kind of face-to-face connection that we love to have happen. It's Wednesday, July 8th at the Roxy Theater in San Francisco's Mission District, 800-525-9917 or KALW.org. We're going to be going back to the program in just a few seconds, so give your support now at 800-525-9917 or KALW.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with journalist Andrew Coburn about his new book, Kill Chain, The Rise of the High-Tech Assassins. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are speaking about the fantastic documentary, She's Beautiful When She's Angry, which resurrects the buried history of the women who founded the modern women's rights movement from 1966 to 1971. Mary Doerr is director and producer of the film. We're also joined by Alice Wolfson, veteran political activist and pioneer in the women's health movement. She belonged to D.C. Women's Liberation, was a member of the Daughters of Lilith. She was leading voice protesting the lack of female participation in the 1970 Nelson Pill hearings. Today, she's a lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities who have issues with their insurance companies. Alta is an award-winning poet. She founded Shameless Hussy Press, the first feminist press in the country. It operated from 1969 to 1989, and she runs the blog Living with a Dread Disease. She retired the press when multiple sclerosis limited her activities. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any untold stories about the women's movement that you would like to share, we'd love to hear from you, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And, you know, we were talking earlier about all of these attacks on abortion, the bill that just passed the House yesterday. If you were fighting for these rights in the late 60s and the 70s, what are your thoughts about today? And what, I mean, I feel like a broken record. We always ask this question, what is most effective? But we have to keep asking it. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Before the break, we were talking about these consciousness-raising groups where women would get together and share stories and realize they had the same story, and then they would organize. And in your case, Alice joined so many different organizations. So you were talking about just what your experience was like in those groups and the importance of those groups.
Well, to realize that you've been raised in a certain way and that your choices are totally limited because you're a woman, and to understand that that's a societal thing, that's not just your mother who thought you should just get married, and it's not just your father who thought you should go on to study poetry, that this was going around for women across the board. I want to make it clear that I think largely we're talking about middle-class women in these consciousness-raising groups. I was not a participant in groups that involved working-class women or particularly women of color, because at that point, when I was active in Washington, D.C., those groups did not have women of color in them, although D.C. Women's Liberation did have an alliance with the welfare rights group in Washington, because Washington at that time was a 76% black city, and you really couldn't organize at all unless you were a multiracial group. So I just think that it made all the difference. Out of those groups came things like child care centers, early emphasis on community taking care of children. At several demonstrations, one that a sit-in at the then Secretary of Health and Human Welfare Secretary Finch, we had maybe 20 women in the room. I think this is there's a little clip of this in the movie. And everybody who had a baby had the baby with them. People were nursing, and the higher ups in that office said, "You can't do that here." And we would say, as we always did, "Well, show us where the daycare center is, and we'll be happy to bring the children to the daycare center." And now I will say that the somewhat new, now it's old, but when they were building the courthouse in San Francisco on McAllister Street, they do have a daycare center there, so that. That's something I think that came out of the sort of struggles that we had and realized in consciousness raising groups.
Well, we have a caller who was involved in a consciousness raising group that was featured in the film. Let's hear from Irene in Oakland. Hi, Irene.
Hi, Rose. Thank you. This is so wonderful. And I saw the film back in February, and my group was in it very briefly. But you talked earlier about where are young women today, and I just wanted to make the point that a few weeks ago on your new program, Inflection Point, which is on Fridays, there was an interview with young women engineers in the tech industry, and they have started a mentoring project called Glass Breakers. And in describing their work, you know, and their training and how they got involved in math and engineering and coding and things like that, they referred to a mother and an aunt who were feminists during the 70s. And that, you know, it was so reassuring to me to just see that influence and to see, you know, their courage in being in the field that they're in now and the leadership that they've taken. And you know, and that they acknowledge their inspiration. That was just great. And I have a son, you know, and I know that he's been influenced, but it's different.
Hmm. Yeah, well, thank you for calling in about that, Irene. Alta, you want to jump in there?
I know so many young women who are active in things we were never active in, women who have started their own businesses. I know a woman who runs a yoga studio, a woman who runs a motion graphics company, a woman who has a dance studio called Hip Line. These are things that Alice and I never would have thought of doing. They seemed impossible to us. There are very active young women. If you've seen the movie, you've seen part of Slut Walk, which is raising the consciousness that women are not raped because of what we wear. We are raped because men are being aggressive. And again, Susan Griffin was one of the people who pointed this out. She said, "It is not a crime of passion." And because of her, the whole mentality of how rape is dealt with now was made public.
And also, I mean, we've done so many shows about young women who are so active. In Texas, for example, trying to help women get access to health care. It's just that these stories don't come out as they should, or don't get the attention that they should. And Alice, since you brought up that story, what was it like for you with Shameless Hussy Press when, I'm sorry, Alta, when you first published some of these books,
right,
and some of these writings came out for the first time,
right,
talk about the reaction.
I had a women's poetry reading and I couldn't get anyone to come. I came and I read poems. Pat Parker came and read poems. And I think Susan Griffin. All the other poets I asked refused to come to a women's only poetry reading. We had it at the Berkeley Art Center, and it was us and our boyfriends. That was practically the whole audience. So that was back in 1968 or 69. I started the press in 69 because Susan Griffin and Pat Parker and I were sending out poems and not getting published, and I knew we were all great poets. But as I say, I started in the garage with seven sheets of paper running on an AB Dick 360. And the opposition was not just covert, you know, it wasn't just people saying we're not coming to a reading just of women. bookstores wouldn't carry our books. There were only two bookstores in the country that carried Shameless Hussy, Gotham Bookmart in New York and Uphaste Book in Berkeley.
Wow.
And they've gone out of business. Cody's Books came on about 3 years later after Susan Griffin became well known. But the support was minimal. You don't have to have enormous support to keep going. Just keep going. And our small group, people talk about how important they were and how organized they were. There were only four of us in our small group.
Alta is an award-winning poet. She founded Shameless Hussy Press in 1969 and ran it until 1989, the first feminist press in the country. She retired the press when multiple sclerosis limited her activities. Today, she runs the blog Living with a Dread Disease. Her latest book is Another Moment. We're also joined by Alice Wolfson. Alice belonged to D.C. Women's Liberation. She was one of the leading voices protesting the lack of female participation. There was no female participation in the 1970 Nelson Pill hearings. Today, she's a lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities who have issues with their insurance companies. And Mary Dore is director and producer of the film She's Beautiful When She's Angry, which resurrects the buried history of the women who founded the modern women's rights movement. And if you'd like to join us, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. If you have any hidden stories you'd like to share, if you want to help us make sense of what we're facing today, 40 years after these amazing women fought for the basic right to choose and looking at where we are today, give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Jenny in Berkeley. Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Hi. I was a member of Committee to Defend Reproductive Rights, so I know Alice Wilson. Hi, Alice.
Hi, Jenny.
And I wanted to say, I had heard someone speaking recently talking about the fact that abortion was really not an issue or a concern at all for the right-wing leadership until the late 60s, when a lot of progressive policies were being implemented and, you know, progressives were the dominant force in American politics. And apparently there were some meetings, you know, I don't know the details of the exact time, but some conservative leaders sat down and strategized how to increase their numbers, and they realized they could use this issue to attract conservative Catholics, of which there are a lot, attract Catholics to their conservative causes and thereby expand their numbers greatly. So, you know, I think now is people now are puzzled why abortion continues to be an issue. I think it's just purely a political strategy to keep Catholics in the fold. And so I was wondering what people thought about this idea.
All right. Thank you for that, Jenny. Alice, do you want to comment on that first?
Well, I would say I wouldn't limit it to Catholics. I would say right-wing fundamentalists of any stripe. I mean, it's totally an organizing issue I'm going to make it broader for the right wing. And remember, in the 60s, abortion was still illegal, but women were beginning to organize. Abortion is such an important issue to women because it's basically the seminal issue. If women can't control their bodies, how can they talk about controlling anything? And I think that the right wing realizes that. And for one or another reason, and I'm open to any suggestions, we have not been able to package it right. We've lost the hearts and minds in a way. If women are thinking it's okay to limit abortion, we've lost the hearts and minds. We're not saying it right. And I don't know what. We've said choice. I would be horrified if somebody was forced to have an abortion, equally as much as I would be horrified if somebody was forced to bear a child.
And on this issue, I think it's also important to point out the fact that when these extreme measures are taken to the voters, they almost never pass, even in South Dakota or Colorado. But when the politicians decide, that's when they pass. And so, for example, the Wall Street Journal and NBC did a poll recently and found an overwhelming majority of the public agrees with Roe v. Wade. So don't you think that's it's important to point that out?
I do. I think it's a very important point. Also, just to add to that, in Mississippi, there was a personhood amendment that was voted down.
Right, exactly.
So, yes, women, when women feel that they really are in danger, I think that they organize. Now, we're facing an election, a presidential election, where the Supreme Court is up for grabs. If Hillary or whoever the Democrat is doesn't win, the next appointees to the Supreme Court are going to be appointed by somebody who's anti-abortion.
And the majority of the Republicans running oppose abortion, even in cases of rape and incest.
Exactly.
And this is a first.
Yes. Well, I think that women should start to pay attention to this because we may lose this fundamental right.
We have another email on this issue from Peggy. She says, coming out is needed. Gay rights did not make progress until people learned that their family members, friends, best teachers were gay. Women who've had an abortion have to come out. Activist and congressional candidate Darcy Burner has recommended this. We have to remove the shame from having an abortion the way gay men and women remove the shame from homosexuality.
I think that's true, but I think it's been tried before. I think when I was in CDRR, we had a bus poster campaign, and the poster had a picture of about five women, a black woman, an old woman, a young white woman holding a baby, a Hispanic woman, and the tagline was, "Can you tell which one of us has had an abortion?" And then it said, "All of us." And CDR, the numbers swelled to over 300 people. But I think it's difficult to figure out how to do that on a national level, on one where it will really draw attention. And maybe it is the women politicians. Maybe it is the women lawyers who wouldn't be there but for the women's movement, and the women doctors, and the women engineers, and the women CEOs who need to begin to spearhead that kind of a movement.
And well, some women politicians today are voting for these laws.
That's absolutely true.
Alta, you want to jump in?
When Alice Paul wrote the Equal Rights Amendment, back when the suffragists were getting the vote, the Equal Rights Amendment came up over and over and over. We still don't have it. The Equal Rights Amendment has not passed. Until we get the Equal Rights Amendment, we are working from a lower rung on the ladder. When Alice Paul was asked her opinion on people fighting for abortion, she said, "Get the Equal Rights Amendment first. Everything else can follow."
Kind of agree with that. I think that, especially now that I'm a lawyer, which I wasn't back then, I see how important it is to have rights encoded, basically, and we do not.
Right.
Alice Wolfson is a veteran political activist. She's featured in the documentary She's Beautiful When She's Angry, one of the leading voices protesting no female participation in the 1970 Nelson Pill hearings. Today, she's a lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities who have their issues with their insurance companies. Alta founded Shameless Hussy Press in 1969. It ran to 1989. She's author of Letters to Women, the first book of lesbian poems in the nation. She retired the press when multiple sclerosis limited her activities. Her latest book is Another Moment, Living Well with a Dread Disease. And Mary Doerr is director and producer of She's Beautiful When She's Angry. And this film resurrects the buried and radical history of the women who founded the modern women's rights movement. And you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Alta brought up the equal rights movement, and Mary, you brought up something in your film that kind of blew us all away. In 1971, Congress passed bipartisan legislation that moved us closer to establishing universal child care. And when I saw that, I thought, we need to do a show about this because I bet most people don't know. Congress authorized substantial funding for the program. In today's dollars, it would be the equivalent of five times the federal budget for Head Start. And then President Nixon vetoed it. Why doesn't
this get tragedy?
Yeah, why doesn't this get more attention today?
because no one knows it happened. Ruth Rosen, who wrote this amazing book on the history of the women's movement, you know, was the first person to point it out to me, and she's a native Berkeleyan. And it's just one of those things where somehow it slipped aside. I mean, it was on the front page of newspapers when this happened. It wasn't, you know, obscured. But I feel that most people, particularly in this country, it's almost like we feel like we don't even deserve this right. This right could never possibly happen here. And that's a tragedy, too. I mean, it's important to know that we came close. It's important to know that we could organize for this again. And that's one of the things that I think is so important that we try to showcase in the film, is that the women's movement, you know, they thought big. And that's one of the things I admire so much. They didn't say, you know, we want abortions. They said free abortions on demand, because they wanted, they knew poor women couldn't afford them. They also knew that they didn't want a doctor's permission slip in order to have an abortion if that's what they needed. And it's the same thing. They said free 24-hour child care, because they knew that working class women need child care perhaps for the night shift or elsewhere. So we all need to think bigger.
Hmm. Well, let's hear from another caller. Let's go to Marge Nelson. Hi, Marge. Welcome to the show.
Hi, that's me. Well, I was there from the very beginning. And in 1970, I was in a park in Washington, D.C., where we had a speak out about abortion. Flo Kennedy was one of the speakers, as was I. And we were threatened. The Catholic Church said if T. Grace Atkinson came, they were going to kill her. So we had, we were doing security around the park. But that's just one thing. I met Alice Paul and lived with her and worked with her in 1970 and helped to pass the Equal Rights Amendment in 1971. I lived there for a year and worked. I met Alice Paul, and I was doing my a dissertation about them, and Alice Paul said, I knocked on the door of the Women's Party, and it went in. And Alice Paul said, "If you want to know history, why are you studying history? The point is to make history."
That's great.
She was fabulous. And Mabel Vernon was still was alive then, and she was the arch activist. She's the one that went all over the country and speaking about the vote for women. And she was one of the first women to be arrested. And so I did spent quite a bit of time with her. She was a radical, and she was very much concerned about the whiteness of the movement. Her father was an abolitionist, so we talked about that, about the Women's Party.
Well, Marge, thank you for the call, and you're getting huge smiles in the studio. Can you stay on the line? Because we'd love to get your phone number for a future show. Alta, you were taking some notes. I know.
Yes, I had a chance to meet Alice Paul. She had been stuck in a rest home when her nephew was no longer able to take care of her. And I went to see her, and the nurse said she was this nice old lady who kept imagining she knew senators. I said, "She does know senators." And I found out that Alice was dictating letters to that nurse to send to senators, and the nurse would pretend to write it down. So I hired a secretary for Alice Paul, and her letters began to get mailed, and she connected with half a dozen suffragists who were still alive in Washington, D.C., and they came to the rest home to visit her and to talk about politics. When the previous caller mentioned Women's Party, they're not talking a little party of dishes and tea time. They're talking about it was, as opposed to the Democratic Party, as opposed to the Republican Party, it was the Women's Party putting women up to run for office. And that started with Alice Paul and the suffragists.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for that story. And thank you, Alta, for adding to it. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I'd love to have you all back because this history is just so important. Alice Wolfson is a political activist, lawyer fighting for the rights of people with disabilities. Alta founded Shameless Hussy Press. And Mary Dorr is director and producer of She's Beautiful When She's Angry. Thank you all so much. And thank you for your work.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you all.
Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.